You're listening to LGRadio.online. Welcome to In the Benny Green Archives.
I see that it's time for us to pay our annual tribute to one of the most spectacular screwballs who ever graced and occasionally disgraced the annals of the Broadway musical. I refer to William Anthony Maguire, who flits through the lives of people like the Gershwins and Flo Ziegfeld like an avenging angel, too drunk to remember who he's supposed to be avenging. Maguire, who died on September the 16th, 1940, after 65 bibulous and irreverent years, first creeps into the annals in 1923, when he suggests to Eddie Cantor and Flo Ziegfeld that there might be a show in the idea of Cantor dressing up in comical clothes. Well, I don't suppose that was how they first got the idea for War and Peace, but it was a start of some kind. They called the show Kid Boots, and it had a score by Harry Tierney and Joseph McCarthy that was so undistinguished that after the production opened, they started looking around for a proper song to put in the score. Then again, the show opened on New Year's Eve 1923. Now, to a man like Maguire, so far as the corkscrew was concerned, every night was New Year's Eve. So I can't imagine the condition he was in when the curtain went up. Probably he went up with it, so full of bubbles, was he? Anyway, the show succeeded, ran nearly 200 performances, but the only song anybody remembers from it today was the one they slipped in after the opening.
Dinah, is there anyone finer in the state of Carolina? If there isn't, you know her, sure to me. Dinah, with her Dixie eyes blazing, how I'd love to sit and gaze in to the eyes of Dinah Lee. Every night, why do I shake with fright? Because my dynamite changed her mind about me. Got to tell you about Dinah. If she wanted to China, I would hop an ocean liner just to be with Dinah Lee. Is there anyone finer in the state of Carolina? If there isn't, you know her, sure to me. Dinah, with her Dixie eyes blazing, how I'd love to sit and gaze in to the eyes of Dinah Lee. Every night, why do I shake with fright? Because my dynamite changed her mind about me. Here's the story about Dinah. If she wanted to China, I would hop an ocean liner just to be with Dinah Lee. Pretty Dinah Lee.
And that song is one of the great examples in the 1920s of artist and material coming together. But it didn't satisfy Flo Ziegfeld, who was forever thinking of ways to improve the show Kid Boots. Now, Ziegfeld's habit was to send people very long telegrams, regardless of the cost. And once Kid Boots reached Chicago, he started bombarding Cantor with these endless communications. One day, Cantor received a 12-page Ziegfeld telegram consisting entirely of suggested alterations to the show. Well, Cantor, being the kind of man he was, sent back a one-word reply, yes. Ziegfeld sent back his reply as follows. What do you mean, yes? Do you mean, yes, you'll take out the song, or yes, you'll put in the lines, or yes, you'll fix the scene, or yes, you've talked to the actors? Cantor sent back another one-word answer, reading, no. But by the time all this was happening, William Maguire had floated downstream to other commitments. But he came back into Ziegfeld's life when he worked out a plot for a show to be called Rosalie. And that was the one where Ziegfeld got so muddled that he ended up with two composers, two librettists, two lyricists, and no show. And as if this wasn't enough, Maguire was also writing another Ziegfeld show called The Three Musketeers, and nobody could ever find him. As one of Ziegfeld's biographers writes, Maguire was constantly being picked up in back alleys. When the show opened, Ziegfeld wired to Maguire, show doing badly. Maguire wires back, Congratulations in the darkest hour of your success. Well, inexplicably, Ziegfeld continued to traffic with Maguire, who wrote another Cantor show for him, this time a classic, but not because of Maguire. This one was rescued by Walter Donaldson and Gus Kahn, who turned out one of the outstanding scores of the decade.
My baby don't care for shows. My baby don't care for clothes. My baby just cares for me. My baby don't care for cars and races. My baby don't care for. Don't please this. Liz Taylor is not a star high, and even Lana Turner's smile. Something he can't see. My baby don't care. Who knows? My baby just cares.
Several songs that have survived the original production of Whoopee, whose title song, of course, was one of those which has not only survived its own day, but come to symbolise that day, as many a memorable song can. Nobody ever sang Whoopee quite like Cantor, but then again, that was the beauty of the song, that it lent itself to all kinds of different interpretations by all kinds of different artists, some of whom were no more akin to Cantor in style than I am.
Another bride, another June, another sunny honeymoon, another season, another reason for making Whoopee. Yeah. A lot of shoes, a lot of rice, the groom is nervous. He answers twice. It's really killing that he's so willing to make a Whoopee. Mm. Now picture a little loveliness down where the roses cling. Picture the same sweet loveliness. Think what a year can bring. Yes, he's washing dishes and baby clothes. He's so ambitious, he even sews. But don't forget, folks, that's what you get, folks, for making whoopee. Another year, maybe less. What's this I hear? Well, can't you guess? She feels neglected, and he's suspected of making whoopee. Yeah, she sits alone most every night. He doesn't phone, he doesn't write. He says he's busy, but she says, is he? He's making whoopee. Now he doesn't make much money, only $5,000 per. Some judge who thinks he's funny says you'll pay $6,000 to her. He says, now judge, suppose I fail. Judge say, budge right into jail. You'd better keep her. I think it's cheaper than making whoopee. Yes, yeah, you better keep her. Daddy, I think it's cheaper than making whoopee.
The title song from the 1929 Walter Donaldson, Gus Kahn, Bill McGuire show, Whoopee. Later on, McGuire drifted into the only place on this planet where his habits could ever be found acceptable, Hollywood. And it was there that he perpetrated the greatest joke of all, when he wrote one of those solemn scripts about a great show business luminary. Yes, it was McGuire who, with his tongue in somebody's cheek, wrote the script for The Great Ziegfeld, in which Flo, that bankrupt girl chaser, is depicted as a grandfatherly eminence with silver-grey Marcel waves and a disposition which would endear him to dogs and small children. The Great Ziegfeld had a modest, unpretentious kind of score. A few Danube waltz, an extract or two from Madame Butterfly, bits of Dvorak's Humoresque in G-flat, interludes of Flo pursuing girls through lots of flats, Rhapsody in Blue, On with the Motley, and various other lightweight snippets. What McGuire had done was to invent a new cinematic genre, the Ziegfeld picture, the kind of production which gets by merely by using the great name. I recall in my early teens a version of The Follies, whose best song was invariably referred to by musicians up and down the country as You Stepped Out of a Drum.
You stepped out of a dream. You are too wonderful to be what you seem. Could there be eyes like yours? Could there be lips like yours? Could there be smiles like yours? Honest and truly, you stepped out of a cloud. I want to take you away, away from the crowd, and have you all myself, alone and apart, out of a dream, save into my heart.
cloud. I want to take you away, away from the crowd, and have you all to myself, alone and apart, out of a dream, safe into my heart. Wa-dee-da-la, out of a dream.
Words and music by Gus Kahn and Nacio Herb Brown. And that's one of a great many items with a link of some kind with Flo Ziegfeld. And through Ziegfeld, with Bill McGuire. A man who finally got a nod of approval for posterity when P.G. Wodehouse met up with him in Hollywood and wrote to a friend, "I like McGuire." Now that kind of world and that kind of life might seem a million times removed from the jazz world, but in fact it's one of the little ironies of life that every so often when you want to trace an old forgotten song, the only recording you can find is some jazz version that the musicians recorded not so much because they liked the song, but because the record people wanted something topical. While looking for some quite different items, I stumbled during the week on a couple of old songs that I don't remember hearing about anywhere, but which do have famous enough roots. In 1937, there was a First National picture called San Quentin, starring Pat O'Brien and Humphrey Bogart and Anne Sheridan. You can guess the plot from the cast list and the film title. Not exactly a musical, but they did have one song in it. So they got the studio dray horses to knock one out. It turned out to be called How Could You? And the only halfway decent recording I could find was one of those small group jazz versions. And notice how Al Dubin, thinking of food as usual, plays around in the middle eight on the theme of apples.
Just when romance got a start, you decided it was time to part. How could you? How could you? It was all a night like this. You left me and didn't leave a kiss. How could you? How could you? You know that love is just like apple pie. Sweet or tart, you could be the apple of my eye, but you upset the apple cart. I was looking forward to all those little things you didn't do. How could you break my heart?
Billie Holiday there with How Could You from the forgotten thriller San Quentin. Words and music by Dubin and Warren. That version was made in March 1937, probably to coincide with the release of the film, or at least with the release of Pat O'Brien from the picture. It was while I was celebrating that discovery that I noted something else on the same album of a rather similar nature. The movie Going Places is not really obscure at all, thanks to the fact that the phrase Jeepers Creepers went into the dictionaries of popular slang. And that was the picture where Dick Powell ends up with Anita Louise and Louis Armstrong gets the horse. And who can say that Louis didn't get the better of the bargain? Now, Warren and Johnny Mercer wrote several songs for that picture. And as is often the case, when one song becomes a big hit, the others get forgotten. I've often wondered about those other forgotten songs in the film, especially one called Oh, What a Horse Was Charlie, which sounds just like the kind of idea for Johnny Mercer to write a funny lyric for. But I have found a recording of another song from the picture, a Billie Holiday performance recorded November 1938. The tenor saxophone playing is by Lester Young, but who is the trumpeter?
Let me hear you say it with a kiss. If you mean that look I've seen, say it with a kiss. There is wine and candles shine and music in your lips, music in the touch of your fingertips. Words may not convey it, say it with a kiss. And your look might speak a book that my eyes might miss. You don't have to know the words to love's familiar tune. Say it with a kiss and say it soon.
Billie Holiday, Say It With A Kiss, performed there by one of those charming casual groups led by pianist Teddy Wilson, who contributed so much to my musical education when I was in my teens. The trumpeter was, of course, Harry James. Now, the business of Harry Warren switching partners from Al Dubin to Johnny Mercer is never one I've been very clear about. Around about the same time that Warners were filming Going Places, they were also making a picture about a nightclub called Garden of the Moon. Pat O'Brien was there yet again, but the important thing from our point of view is that Harry Warren worked not with Al Dubin and not with Johnny Mercer, but with both of them. The official credits for the lyrics of that picture read Mercer and Dubin, which leaves posterity with the not unpleasant task of trying to figure out who wrote what. I think it's possible but unlikely that the writers shared duties on the same lyric. More probable, I think, that they split the songs up with one doing this and the other doing that. Now, I've got no way of proving what I'm about to say, but I think that the lyrics coming up now sound more like Mercer than they do Dubin.
I'm the girlfriend of the whirling dervish. I'm the sweetest one he's found. Yeah, but every night in the mellow moonlight, while he's out dervishing with all his might, I give him the run around. All the boyfriends of the whirling dervish are his best friends too. No doubt when he isn't about, they all come a hurry and take me out. I give him a merry chase. He dreams of a Hindu honeymoon. He doesn't dream that every night while he goes out to make an honest rupee, I go out and make a lot of whoopee. Oh, the love song of the whirling dervish has a sweet and tender sound. Yeah, but will it burn if he ever should learn that while I'm doing him a real good turn, I give him the run around.
Music by Harry Warren, words probably by Johnny Mercer, possibly by Al Dubin, but only just possibly by Johnny Mercer and Al Dubin. On September the 16th, 1916, there was born the best popular singer ever to come out of the Argentine. The way that came about was that the mother was a concert singer and the family moved around with her. The baby arrived in the middle of Buenos Aires, but later did better, becoming one of the best of the band singers and then one of the best of the Hollywood singers. In 1945, he found himself in one of those pictures which is supposed to be about a nightclub, kind of Garden of the Moon 10 years on. Nobody remembers the plot now except that the hero is supposed to be a doctor with grease paint in his veins. One day they'll make a movie about a doctor with blood in his veins, but until that we'll have to make do with this, which is a song that the doctor sings to the showgirl. The thing to listen for here is some evidence that the song is no good, because you see this was the last score that Harry Warren composed for Fox before they let him go. Now why would any studio let Harry Warren go? Over to you, Daryl Zanuck.
Each time I look at you is like the first time. Each time you're near me, the thrill is new. And there is nothing that I wouldn't do for the rare delight of the sight of you. The more I see you, the more I want you. Somehow this feeling just grows and grows with every sigh. I become more mad about you, more lost without you, and so it goes. Can you imagine how much I love you? The more I see you,
as years go by. I know the only one for me can only be you. My arms won't free you. My heart won't try.
The More I See You from Billy Rose's Diamond Horseshoe, sung there by the distinguished Argentinian Dick Haynes. Not so long before he died, I had an odd kind of conversation with Haynes. It was odd for two reasons. First, because he forgot I was coming and had to be awoken from a two-day sleep to welcome me. And second, because of the things he said about the kind of songs he was associated with. When I mentioned a few of these songs, he said he didn't feel they retained any validity because, quote, they were too innocent. Haynes thought the world had changed since the Gershwins and the rest of them were composing, which I found amazing. That anybody should consider the decade of the Great Depression innocent seems to me outlandish even now. And that anybody should measure the merit of a song by its degree of innocence also struck me as surprising. But whatever one makes of the theory, that was what Haynes said, and that was clearly what he believed. Here is the very song which drew from him the theory that these days the world is unable to swallow such naivety.
Oh, it really wasn't my intention to disregard convention. It was just an impulse that had to be obeyed. Though it seems convention we've been scorning, I'll still not go in mourning. Though my reputation is blemished, I'm afraid. With just one kiss, what heaven, what rapture, what bliss. Honestly, I thought you wouldn't. Naturally, you thought you couldn't. And probably we shouldn't. But aren't you kind of glad we did? Actually, it all was blameless. Nevertheless, they'll call it shameless. So let's keep the lady nameless. But aren't you kind of glad we did? Socially, I'll be an outcast. Obviously, we dined.
From the shocking Miss Pilgrim, the 1947 movie musical which made history by being the first ever posthumous Hollywood score, having been put together from unused Gershwin songs discovered after George's death in 1937. Anyway, that's it for now. See you same time next week.
You've been listening to In the Benny Green Archives here on lgradio.online. Please do visit the website to find out when the next episode is on, along with all our other shows. This is lgradio.online. Thanks for listening.